Will you join me in prayer? Loving God, you created this world in love, and you gave it to us. And today we come to say thank you, to seek to understand you and this world around us just a little bit better. So help us. Help us to be faithful to you and to hear a fresh word from you today. Amen. Well, in our house, this summer has been the summer of Harry Potter. Now, some of you may have grown up with Harry Potter. I didn't. I read it as an adult. And some of you may have had the joy of reading it yourselves or sharing it with your children. But if you haven't heard the story of Harry Potter first, you have to read it. It is extraordinary. But maybe there's another story that resonates with you. Maybe you grew up reading the Chronicles of Narnia. Maybe you grew up watching the Star Wars films. They are still so incredibly popular. Or maybe if you were go way, way back, you grew up on Pilgrim's Progress or the Canterbury Tales. I don't know. But I know that in all times and places, people have loved stories. And I think the Harry Potter story is so extraordinary because it taps into something that I think must be true about most of us. It taps into this idea that we might look ordinary on the surface, but what if we were truly extraordinary? What if we had some extraordinary superpower that nobody else could see? And that's what all of these sagas tap into. Whether it's Star Wars, where the farm boy from Tatooine ends up being the one to restore balance to the Force, or whether it's Harry Potter, where an abused and unloved orphan ends up being a wizard of all things, and also being so brave and so good-hearted and kind that the entire fate of the world rests on his young shoulders. Haven't we always wished that we had some kind of power that made us truly extraordinary despite all surface to the contrary? And so even though we know these stories aren't real, I know that Harry Potter is just pretend, but they reveal to us something that's true about the human condition. Sometimes they reveal to us powerful truths, and they help us see and believe in forces that can't be explained, in forces that are larger than ourselves, than any one person or any one community. And so sometimes when I hear the story that we read today, I think, isn't that kind of tapping into the same thing? The idea that we might all look ordinary, we might feel sometimes just like ordinary people, and yet we are actually extraordinary because we were created in God's image. Not anything else, not any of the other wonderful, amazing things in this world of ours, but we, people, every one of us, were created in the divine image. And so we might look ordinary, but we are not. We're truly extraordinary. And so when I hear the story of Genesis, I think that it's tapping into something that people not unlike us must have been feeling and thinking thousands of years ago as they, like us, tried to make sense of their world and tried to find something deeper. And so Genesis, while a story, is a different kind of story than Harry Potter or any of these other great stories. And I think what separates it from the truly made-up stories is that Genesis reveals to us a deep and eternal truth. And I remember this because I studied Genesis with one of the foremost Genesis scholars, Ted Hebert. He was a professor of mine in seminary. And Ted used to begin his Genesis class by listing the many reasons that Genesis is so cool. Now, Ted had a lot of reasons that Genesis is so cool, because nobody loves the book of Genesis like this man loves the book of Genesis. But the one that stuck with me out of all the reasons that he listed is that Genesis is all about beginnings or origins. That's actually what the word Genesis means. It's just a fancy Greek word that means beginnings or origins. And so this gets at what we're all asking. Who are we? Why are we? Where do we come from? Where does everything around us come from? And as we try to answer those questions by starting with the book of Genesis, we start with this one eternal truth, that our world was created for a purpose, that there is a creator who chose to make us, all of us, in the divine image of God. And not only is that incredibly powerful, and not only is that, I think, one of the core reasons that we're all gathered here together today, but I think it's the reason that we've decided to spend this whole year as a congregation studying the Bible together. Because Genesis, as much as the story of creation gives us answers a lot of those questions, it also raises a lot of questions. It seeks to tell us to make sense of the world, and it seeks to tell us why we are who we are. But it also raises questions about, well, how do we know this? And how do we make sense of what we're reading in the Bible, knowing that it was written thousands of years ago, that there are a lot of challenges to trying to understand the stories of the Bible? And so a real simple way, I think, to look at that is to realize that some people are going to view the Bible as 100% real, true, inerrant, that there is nothing in the Bible that can't be understood literally. And then on the way other end of the spectrum, there are people who are going to tell us, well, the Bible is myth. They're made up stories, made up just like people, the Greeks and the Romans and other cultures, made up stories to explain the world around them. I think, full disclosure for myself, I think the answer doesn't lie in either one of these extremes. I think that we are here today, thousands of years later, because our foundation is not built on myth, because our foundation is built on this eternal truth of who God is, and that the people who were writing these stories to share with us were people who experienced God personally and wanted to share that story with those around them, wanted to tell those stories to their children and their grandchildren, and eventually wanted to write those stories down. But I also think that we have to approach the Bible with a little bit of an understanding of what we're reading and who were the people who wrote the Bible. Because they weren't scientists. They weren't trying to explain the ins and outs of how the universe was created. They didn't share our modern understanding of time. They didn't know anything about dinosaurs or big bangs or evolution or any of the other things that modern people know. So some people might see that as a flaw in the Bible, but I don't. I think it's just helpful to remember that when we're approaching the Bible, we're not approaching a science book or a history text. It's kind of like the difference between approaching a memoir and approaching a book for a nonfiction book for a class. I don't think that the Bible writers were either journalists or historians. They weren't trying to just present the facts. We know that they weren't actually present at the time of creation. And so Genesis doesn't pretend to be an eyewitness account of what was happening. We're not, if we read it like it's the news feed on CNN headline news, we're going to do ourselves a great disservice. But instead, I like to think of this as kind of the beginning of a memoir. Perhaps a memoir that begins where the author tells the story of how his or her parents met. Now, we know that they weren't there, but we know that that's a story that had been told time and time again with great love and care because it was so important. And now you might notice that I've been saying they when talking about the biblical writers. And I think that's actually one of the wonderful gifts of the Bible, that the stories we have were written in so many different times and places by different people, people speaking to the needs of their communities. And people who needed to be reminded of what they were doing and why it was so important. Sometimes they looked around and the world was hostile to what they believed. Sometimes they needed to remind themselves, who is this God who we worship? And sometimes they did that in maybe a setting not quite as fancy as our own, but in a worship setting. And so you can imagine that what we just heard with the children and what you all participated in will be the kind of thing that people could do in worship, chorusing together, reminding themselves of this powerful God who speaks things into being. But as we continue with Genesis, we're going to get a little bit of a more intimate God. A God who gets down in the dirt and has hands that God rubs together to make human beings. A God who likes to walk alongside Adam and Eve in the garden. And we can imagine that maybe those were the stories that people liked to tell around the campfire. The stories of their own experience with God and thinking of their ancestors who might have even had the privilege of walking with God and hearing God's voice personally. So these different pieces that come together to give us the Bible, they are rich and they're powerful. And they come out of communities of people struggling together, just like we are going to struggle together this year to make sense of the Bible stories we're hearing. Those were the kind of people who were telling these stories, even if they were 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, or maybe even more. But I think that why it's so important that we struggle with this Genesis story is because in some ways it's going to give us the foundation for all the other conversations we have this year. And there's a humorous piece in your bulletin. I don't know if you've seen it. You're free to rummage around and take it out because I think it's kind of hilarious, but also kind of helpful. It was from Facebook the past few weeks, and it was somebody saying the entire Bible explained in a series of Facebook posts. And I'll let you read it for yourselves, but the general gist is that God says, all right, don't do the things I told you not to do. We can imagine what those things are. Don't be mean. Don't gossip about each other. Don't use unkind and hurtful words. Don't fight. Don't neglect the poor. Look after children and widows and people who need extra help. All of those things. And again, the people say, okay. And then God comes back and says, well, what happened? What did you do? People say, we did the things. And God says, guys, and then what happens? It happens again, right? So God says, you're my people. Don't do the things I told you not to do. And the people say, we won't do the things, God. And people say, God, we did the things. God says, guys, and it happens again and again. And this is really the very nature of the whole Bible. Now, this is kind of a lighthearted way of looking at it. Walter Brueggemann, one of the great Old Testament scholars, gives us a little bit more of a serious way of looking at it. But what he says is actually very similar to what we have here, courtesy of Facebook. And he says that, you know, the Creator, God, made our world for a purpose and created us to keep this relationship going with our Creator. God didn't just turn us loose to do our own thing and leave us up to chance. But every time we do the things that God told us not to do, God comes back. God continues to call us back to grateful obedience, to respond to God. And yet, even if we don't, God knows our world is free. We get to make these choices for ourselves. God loves and respects us too much to force us. And so we get to choose if or how to respond to God. Now, we often use this word covenant to describe that relationship because it's a mutual relationship. And the Bible is the whole story of this push and pull. And I think it's the story that we struggle with today, the push and pull in our own lives. And so, again, that's why we're here. That's why we're spending this year reading the Bible. Because God, by making us in God's own image, God is counting on us. God is counting on us to try to follow as faithfully as we can. And in order to do that, we need to know the stories. We need to follow. We need to know why these stories count. I think these stories count because there's an expression that says we are always one generation away from losing the faith. And that's really important, so I'm going to say it again. We are always one generation away from losing the faith. So if one generation of people stop reading the stories, and they stop telling the stories, and they don't think it's important to share the stories with their children or their grandchildren, the entire Christian faith as we know it can disappear. And I don't know exactly what that looks like. I certainly don't think we're there. I certainly think we have a lot of reasons to be good and joyful and hopeful because we are here. We are here reading these stories together. But I think if we look around, with the exception of every once in a while, a sort of B-grade movie that tells a Bible story, and my apologies to those of you if you really love that Russell Crowe Noah movie last year, but to me, that doesn't cut it. To me, that's not the same as telling these stories in community. And I think what it looks like if we stop telling those stories, well, I think what it looks like is very similar to what I shared this day last year, because I had just come back from sabbatical, and we had spent the summer in Spain. And one of the things I shared last year was how astonished I was. I had heard Christianity in Europe was kind of starting to die out. I'd heard Spain was better than much of Europe. And so I was eager to see what does the church look like, at least in the little corner of Spain where we were spending the summer. And what it looked like was that every town had a church. Every town had a beautiful church right in the center of the town square. But when you went to visit the church, you literally had to turn the light on for yourselves. The churches were dark. And we visited many, many churches, but we visited them as tourists. We visited them like we would visit museums or any other of the beautiful old buildings in Spain. And we would walk in and we would turn the lights on. We didn't see living, breathing, thriving, joyful, loving faith. We saw buildings that were dark, not particularly life-giving. And so here this year, we have the chance to continue all of the wonderful things that this congregation is already doing, and yet to go deeper for ourselves and for our children and for everyone in this community in knowing these stories, in loving our God, and in sharing with our broader community around us. And because sometimes that seems a little bit hard, and it might be a little bit daunting to look at the whole Bible and think, how am I going to be able to read this? How am I going to be able to stick with it? I want us to remember the words that we heard today, and I'm so grateful to Tom for singing them, because I think that we remember what we sing sometimes better than what we speak. But when we have to think about what is the point of the Bible, why does it matter? Think of the words we heard this morning from Micah. Micah said, God has told you, mortals, what is good. To do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. And so may today be the beginning of a whole year of us as a congregation as we seek together justice. And what does justice look like in our time and place? And to love kindness. At the very core, just to love kindness and love the privilege of being kind to one another and to everything around us. And to remember that we do that not just because those are good and important and wonderful things to do, but to remember that we do that because it's the very core of who we are and why we are made.
And that is so that we too may walk humbly with our God. Amen.